SNI, Surgical Neurology International, and SNI Digital Innovations in Learning, in association with the Sub-Saharan African Neurosurgeons, are pleased to present the second monthly Sub-Saharan Africa International Neurosurgery Grand Rounds on the topic of global solutions to clinical challenges in neurosurgery. This Grand Rounds was held on Sunday, July 7th, 2024. This presentation will be given by Professor Samuel Kaba Akaroya, who is the Director of Institutional Care Division of Ghana Health Services in Ghana. His talk will be on the use of intraoperative ultrasound in neurosurgery.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, so thank you so very much for this great opportunity and to all colleagues who are online. I'm going to be talking about intraoperative ultrasound, and I'll do my best to do it as quick as possible. And just one disclaimer, I'm not actually a radiologist, I'm a neurosurgeon, but I think this is the future tool for low-resource setup. I don't have so much experience. This is my fourth year of experience in ultrasound, transoperative. I don't think that is a lot of experience, but I just believe that is the future. Now, why so? Because most of the time we talk about intraoperative MRI, we talk of intraoperative CT scan and all that. These are quite expensive. And in most countries, in the developing countries, should we even have them right now? You got to break down your theater. You need to build a new place to put them. But with the ultrasound, you easily go on without having to make any changes. Let me see. All right, so there we go. Good. So ultrasound is just a machine that uses high frequency sound ways to view inside the body. All right, so with that, the images are captured in real time, and that is a good thing because you see everything you're doing, including the blood flow. And now, just a little history, just to say that Tom Brown and obstetrician Ian Donald, way back in 1956, decided to use the first prototype. And of course, as gynecologist, he used it for the diameter of a head of a fetus. And later on, Theodore and Frederick, they attempted the ultrasound to diagnose brain tumors. And then in the 70s, we just have a boom. Now, this is how the early ultrasounds looks, very bulky, big. And today, ultrasounds look very, very simple, small, portable. You can even have them on your cell phone, and then you get what you want to do, get it done. And that has changed the perception and the expectation of neurosurgeons that now is easily being used in neurosurgery for many, many procedures in brain tumors, placements of EVD, shunts. And it can also help you to actually determine how much volume of tumor you've removed and where your catheter is placed or not. And as I said before, the beauty of ultrasound is that it's allowed live visualization of the structures, and it can be used alone. You don't actually need to have a neuro navigator before you use an ultrasound or intra-op MRI. You can use it alone, and it's a very good navigational tool. So typically when we talk of ultrasound, we're talking about a frequency above human hearing, that is about 20,000 hertz, or you can say 2 megahertz, sorry. And human cannot hear that. So this is how the probe works. I will just try to be as quick and simple. We have different modes in which the ultrasounds operate. So in mode A or aid mode, you can see if the blood, is my cursor being seen? So if we take this as the tissue, yes. You emit you use the transducer, the case of you see the sound goes in and then returns, and this will be your mode A, and then you get whatever you want to see. So hand movement is very, very important in dealing with ultrasound. We also got the mode B, where you see the brightness. So B for brightness, and this is what on the right hand side or left to your computers, you can see the brightness, and you can see how it will look in the ultrasound. Then you have the M mode, which signifies motion, which is movement. So thanks to this mode, you can actually see movement of blood in the tissues and X, Y, and Z. Then we also got the Doppler mode. And in the Doppler mode, I'm being very quick because I think I just have 20 minutes to do this. And the Doppler mode is one of the modes that generally we like to see, and they look nice because you have them in colors and all that. But it helps to quantify the directional velocity of whatever we're doing. So we do have different type of Doppler modes. You have the pulse mode, you have the continual wave mode, and the advantage of the C mode is that unlike the power mode, it determines the flow and the velocity and accuracy. Then you have the Doppler display mode, and we can see the different modes here, spectral mode, and which we are actually not going to talk about it, but it's just to show that in the Doppler mode, we have different type of modes. And the spectral mode is simply typically used to characterize the blood flow through the heart chamber. So cardiothoracic surgeons are more using that. And then you have the color Doppler, which is what we see. Now in the blue only shows that the data is going away from your transducer, and the red shows that the data is coming to your transducer, as we can see in the pictures. Now, the color Doppler is so good because it helps you to document the presence or absence of blood flow within the pathological lesion. So when you're operating a tumor and you use the ultrasound, you can actually see the blood flow, you can see the vessels, and it helps a lot to determine how much you can resect, where the challenge is, and what to do. With the power Doppler, it's a useful tool to examine low velocity blood flow, and it's more sensitive to flow than the color mode. So other modes, and one of the things that neurosurgeons would enjoy, would be the 3D and 4D scanning modes. And this is determined by the probe. The probe is about the 4D is about 7,500. And then one property we do have has to do with the elastography, which has to do with when you're using neuros navigation and you use the ultrasound, you can pick up the difference. In our experience, we've seen 1 centimeter difference when you open you do the craniotomy, as to if you were just from the neural navigator. So now the ultrasound can correct that brain shift once you do your craniotomy. So what kind of things can affect the image quality, the environment, the transducer, and then the system you use? We'll not go too much into that. I will talk a little bit of the line density, which helps to adjust the number of scan lines. You just have to keep trying to scan. Now, as I said, the ultrasound, actually, the most important thing about it has to do with the probe that you use. You have all these different probes. We use a lot of, I'll be talking about the probes that we use, but you have the liner probe, you have the sizes also matter depending on the procedure you're going to do. So the type of scans, we have the 3D, 4D, the color Doppler, we've already spoken about that. And then the properties of the images, why they form the reflection, refraction, absorption, and scattering. Because this is not a course, but just to give a talk and let us understand what we use it for, I'm talking about this, mentioning them to go ahead. Now, if you check here, ultrasound, when you talk of CT scan, you talk about the properties that we look on in echo. In ultrasound, we talk about echogenicity. And echogenicity means that there is no echogenicity that is seen in the ventricles. Hypoechogenicity, normal white matter. Hyperechogenicity, we see that in tumor. We also have the homogenicity, where you see in low grade gliomas, and heterogeneous in high grade gliomas. And then you have this issue of demarcation that has to do with infiltrative versus non-infiltrative tumors that we see. So you have echogenicity, normal tissue, isodense, that we'll be talking in CT scan, or isointense when you're talking about MRI. So you look at hyperechogenic issues, which is the brighter one you see in the files, the tentorium, choroid plexus. The hypoechogenic will be the brainstem, and then the echogenic will be in the ventricles and the basal systems. So use of ultrasound intraoperatively, we use it for many things. It could be in the infections, trauma, VP shunt placement, vascular tumors, cysts, combination with other neuronavigational tools. And now I'm coming to what we do in the Rich Hospital where I work currently. So we have a turning point. And the turning point, as I said, Prof. James, that I'll be talking about Dr. Mariela. She is the one you can see the arrow to. I've gotten some frozen machine a little. So you can see her, she's the one. Prior to her arrival in our hospital in 2021, we were only doing pre-op ultrasound or post-op, and that was being done either by the pediatricians or the radiologists. But she is a neurosurgeon, and she is a pediatric neurosurgeon with over 25 years of experience and has been using ultrasound for over 8 years. I'm happy she's online, so if there is anything, she can also talk to it. For some reason, the screen is gone.
We can still see your screen.
You can see my screen?
Yes,
we can.
All right, okay.
So did you have many more slides after this or not?
Yeah, sure, I do. I'm now going to talk about how we use it.
Oh, okay.
In our setup. But for some reason, good. Is it back? Is it seen?
We have a lost good. It. We can see your screen. Good.
All right. So in our department, we started using the transoperative ultrasound in 2021 with the arrival of Dr. Infante. And as I said, she has a lot of experience with this. And then prior to that, we used to borrow our equipment. This is our first ultrasound. Let me see if the video can show. This was one of those things we're doing with evacuation of intraparenchymal hematoma, and we're using from the machine from our neonatal department. On the other side, you can see on this image where my cursor is, you can see us trying here to do post-op ultrasound to see the ventricles and to see the intracranial pressure. Then something happened dramatically that we recorded our first conjoined twins. And with that, we approached the government and were able to get our first ultrasound. And this is now the ultrasounds that we have in our setup. And this is our typical setup with the navigation. And we try to couple the ultrasound, you can see, with the neural navigation system, with the CUSA, and with all the things that we do, the endoscope, and we tried and we keep trying to learn. Then we went ahead to try to measure the probes and see with our bare holes, if you have a probe, how the probe can go depending on the bare hole you use. If you place in a shunt, you know, this is the diameter, and then this is the kind of ultrasound you might want to use. Now, we have not received a 4D yet, but D probe yet, but we are working towards achieving one or acquiring one very soon. So we've used them in many of these procedures that you've seen listed, and I'll go through some of them bit by bit. So here you can see in hydrocephalus, we use it, EVD and shunts, we use it, it's daily, and we print out everything that we do. So here you can see in the in this video, you can see the ventricles and how we apply after that. You can see on your right side where the cursor is, you can see our tools in there. In literature review, seeing that there are a lot of catheter misplacement and malfunction and revision, but with the ultrasound, you have the opportunity to get in once, and the revision rate is low. Here is a case, a patient who came with a stab wound. Obviously, you can't put this patient on an inside an MRI because you don't know what will happen to the knife. And in CT scan, you get artifacts as we see. And with ultrasound guided, we did the operation, went through the midline, and then we removed the knife without any challenges. And as you can see, and post-op, this is the patient walking when he came after the stab wound. So ultrasound has helped us together with other equipment that we use. We use it, as I said, in the intraparenchymal hemorrhage, especially in CVA, and with the navigation system, we're able to aim everything. And then we don't have to actually shave the ladies because they spend a lot of money with doing their haircut. We get this measure the bell hole, and then we can see here as we put washing the cloth, where you see the water come in. We can see the water. Let me see here again. As you clean the cloth, you can see the water coming in excellently. Then here you can see in hematoma lavage. Let me see. You can see
the water.
You see the water coming out. As it comes, then you can see the grade of washing that you're doing in the hematoma, and then you are done. We can use it to measure the intracranial pressure, as I said, and this is for the young ones. I mean, this is the future of neurosurgery when it comes to neuromonitoring. Then, as I said, you can continue on bedside if you're not satisfied, or you can, it's a procedure with the ultrasound, you can do bedside. And this is the patient when he came 2 days after the surgery. You can see the difference. This case just happened yesterday and was operated on. This is a fracture. You can see multiple bilateral hematomas here. This is epidural and this is intradural, parenchymal. You can see them. All right. So in one side, you do your craniotomy, you remove the hematoma. On the other side, you got the hematomas in there and you can do another craniotomy. With the ultrasound, you come in, you can see. If you look at the CT scan, you see a cystic part of the hematoma and you can see the solid part of the hematoma, which you can also see in the ultrasound. And then you can see the hematoma here, and through the ultrasound guidance, we evacuated this hematoma. So the cystic part will be the blue, the red part will be the hematoma. And then let me play this video. As you put, you don't need to do white craniotomy. So you see this line is removal of the hematoma in one side, and then this side the washing of the hematoma here. So we can see the ultrasonic component. You can see how it's being washed. So this patient, we don't have the post-op yet because it was yesterday. We're now doing the scan, but after that you can see the parameters here, the BP, everything normalized, and we hope it does well. We also use it in gunshots, and this is a patient who came with all these bullets in his waist. And this is the point here. If you go to the MRI, you wouldn't know what to do, whether to the bullets, the pellets will be MRI sensitive or not. They will be magnetic sensitive or not. And if you do CT scan, you get a lot of artifacts. We use the ultrasound. With the ultrasound from the skin, you can actually count. You can see the pellets, and you can actually count all of them, and you can measure the distance and everything. And this is a fluoroscopy. You can see some of the pellets actually moving inside the patient. Let me see towards the end. You see, they are moving. And in CT scan or MRI, you don't see that. Ultrasound helps. During the surgery, this is the ultrasound probe. We come in, and then with the ultrasound, we are able to perform the surgery. And then these are some of the pellets removed. As we can see, this is the patient postoperatively walking and without any big challenges. We do a lot of awake surgery in my center, and we use the ultrasound to do the nerve blockades, as we can see. And this helps to keep the patient without pain. And this is brachial plexus that we repair. You can see the entry point of the knife. You can see where the patient is having the challenges. This is the MRI. This is the ultrasound version. When we did, you can see the vessels and everything. And then we get it repaired with our neuro. You can see with the stimulation of the nerves and with all, you get all that. Tumor resection, we use it every day, every single day. And the good thing is that you locate your tumor, you do your tractography, spectroscopy, you do your registration. We use the ultrasound immediately we do the craniotomy. So you do it before you open the dura. Then after opening of the dura, it guides you. And you can actually see your tools. You can see the tumor. And when you put your bipolar and it's emitting the heat, you can actually see your bipolar. You can see all the tools moving. And you can do your Doppler. You can see the vessels, the blood flow, and everything. So it really helps in visualizing the tumor and the surrounding structures adjacent to the tumor. It when you couple it with the navigation system, to me, it's almost like an MRI because you are seeing everything. And if you use the 3D probe, it's better. Now, maybe those who have used ultrasound a lot on this platform can talk to this because in our setup too, we use this to enhance the tumor visualization, but we've not used yet the contrast in the ultrasound. And we've been checking to see if there will be any contraindication or any reaction. So those who might... Yeah, so I'll be talking about that. So we do that. Sorry, a message came and I was trying to read, and I'll talk about that in the question side. So we look at now using the contrast and using the 3D or 4D probe. This is our patient after resection of the tumor. So why ultrasound? Why am I interested for the younger generation? Because it's relatively cheap, easy to take to many places. We move it to ICU, to the ward, to the theater, everywhere, emergency. And it can be used alone and no need to pause during surgery and say, I'm moving the patient to another room to do an MRI, or you need to record anything, everything is live. The surgical tools can be seen. You can combine with other navigation. You correct the brain shift. It improves the, once we improve the image quality with training, then you can evaluate blood vessels and flow. Neurosurgeons can easily use it. In our setup is we, the neurosurgeons who use it, we don't call in the radiologist. It's cheaper in installation. All you need is small gel and the probe, and then even with the water, the normal saline, you can enhance the imaging. You don't need nuclear people to can certify nothing. And they, of course, it has a learning curve, but the more you do, the more you learn. What are some of the challenges? Maybe the artifacts and the learning curve, but the more you use it, the more you get versed with it, and then you can do more. So in our setup, we use the ultrasound, we use all the probes available, and then we also do some few 3D printing, which we're trying to see how we can combine that with the ultrasound and see how those can go. This ultrasound together with what we do has helped us do a lot of things, including visual reality, using ultrasound too, and all that. So my message today is that nothing can get done at all if a man waited until he could do something so well that no one can find a fault. Just let's start doing what we can, small, small, little by little, we'll do what is possible, and suddenly we're doing what is we thought could not be possible. So this, the future is bright, and I think ultrasound should be incorporated. We are still learning. As I said, I only have 4 years in it. My mentor, Dr. Infante, is online. He has 8 years, and we are still learning in the country, and we never stop learning. I will pause here, but there is a question I will give to Prof. James so that you can moderate. Then I can answer the questions, and my colleagues who are online too can answer, and those with more experience can talk about it. Thank you.
Superb, superb job with real practical advice. Are there questions for Professor Kaba in the use of his instrument?
Go ahead,
hi, sir. Doctor. Sorry, it was excellent, and I really, and I'm sure everybody enjoyed it. But I have one quick question about the conjoint twin that he showed on the exam. Dr. Lazarev did the first conjoint separation at UCLA in US. If you can one time talk about it so he can share his experience, because that's a topic for the next generation of the neurosurgeon. And whenever Dr. Osman and Dr. Strada decide to talk about it, it's a beautiful case, and we really enjoyed your talk and that presentation.
Thank you, Ali. Anybody have questions for Professor Kaba?
Yeah, so I would say to my colleague Daddy, yes, thank you so very much. And sorry for the internet issues that the slides move back and forth. I just had to try to fix it to make the presentation. Maybe in the next round, when we get the opportunity, we'll be talking about the separation of the first conjoined twins in Ghana. And so I reserve that in for when the rounds get back to us, we'll be talking about it. It's very important, and I think it's extremely wonderful experience any neurosurgeon can ever experience once in your lifetime. So we'll be talking about that.
Thank you.
Excellent, excellent presentation. Thank you. And excellent case for the practicality. I wondered if the doctor, Professor Mariel from Cuba, is she still available to make comment?
She's in there.
Mariella?
We start to use the ultrasound with a child because I'm working with a child with 20 years. for 20 years, and start with hydrocephalus, and later introduced the use of the ultrasound with the tumor resection, because the baby no has the hematoma. But when we arrived to Ghana, we start to using for evacuated hematoma with good results, because it's the small hole and the result is very, very good. The proof that you depends, because if you need to see the flow, you use the plane. But the if you use the hydrocephalus, I use the cure. How can I use? I use the glove, aesthetic glove. Previously, we add the gel, and the rest I cover with the cloth. It's sterile and it's secure. We not have the infection after they use the ultrasound.
Excellent. Excellent. I wonder if you could comment on how effective the intraoperative ultrasound is for gauging the extent of tumor resection.
Let me take this before she comes in.
Sure.
Let me say, Dr. Professor Infante is a pediatric associate professor in neurosurgery, and she is in Ghana now in our center as a collaboration between the Ghana government and the Cuban government. So she's on a mission temporarily with us, and we've actually benefited a lot. This is an example of what we have benefited from. And a lot of questions also came in as to the probe. The best probe depends on what you're going to do. If you're going to do just a bare hole and a drainage of hematoma, you just need a small probe. We've evolved to the hockey sticks probe. If you look at some of the probes that are presented, they are able to allow you to actually navigate even inside the ventricles. And outside, if you use a small HCC probe, you can easily evacuate a cyst, you can evacuate an abscess. And then the liner probe is good. When you do craniotomy, you can see it. Then the probe, besides the probe too, depends on the type of machine you have. Some of the machines that you might have, we have one from GE, very excellent. And then the other one that you see there, Windsor. And depends on the quality of the machine. You need to actually talk to the vendor that you're going to use it for neurosurgery. Then they can actually accommodate it and put the apps for it to be for neurosurgery, or else they might configure it in a way you might not be getting good images. And because we are just using them for neurosurgery, we got the GE guys to come in. We bought it purposely for that. We got them to come in and accommodate them for neurosurgery. So we're getting good images. But we hope that with 4D, we should even improve better. Thank you.
I wonder if Ignatius is still here, because I can't see it on my screen. Ignatius, are you still here? There you are.
Yes, sir.
Do you use this, is this practical for you in Cameroon, or do you use it, or what's your experience?
No. I don't have any experience. I only saw it during my training, but I haven't used it.
Is it too expensive a device to get in Cameroon?
No.
Okay, so it's a matter of convenience, I guess. Professor Kaba, how expensive is it to get the proper ultrasound machine that you can use intraoperatively?
All right. So in Ghana, in my facility, it's a public facility. It's a government hospital. So the government bought ultrasounds for primary healthcare. So we went into the ministry and we got one. And then the other one that we got, that was from the GE, the one that we can use the 4D probe. And usually the procurement is done by the ministry, so we can't say how much it is, but it ranges between $20,000 to $30,000, or we can get as much as $50,000. However, the simplest ultrasound machines, you can get them for $10,000, even $5,000. Those that they're using for primary healthcare, that you can actually couple it with your cell phone, they are going for almost $5,000. Even you can get them for $3,000. So it depends on the quality of the ultrasound you need. And the most important thing now will be the probes, because for some reason, they sell with some standardized probes. And then when you want more probes, then they give you different prices for the probe. So for instance, the 4D probe I'm getting is going for $7,500.
What's the learning curve? Is it take how many patients, 10, 20 patients to become comfortable with it? Or how do you establish experience?
All right. So in my personal experience, depending on the kind of procedures you'll be doing, but a neurosurgeon who spends, the more you do, the more you know. And as I said, I only have 4 years. I'm still learning. I'm still learning from Dr. Infante. I'm still learning from the internet. I'm learning from other conferences. But the more you scan, the more you get better. And in a week, if you do this in a week, you should be able to look into CVAs. You should be able to look into cysts. You should be able to look into the common diseases. But then you need more time to go into the vascular diseases. You need more time to go into the tumors and be able to differentiate between the tumor and the adjacent structure. So in a week, every neurosurgeon should be able to use it for simple procedures. And bedside, in a day.
Yeah. We were going to have Professor Mati from Iraq, Baghdad. He uses it extensively in tumor surgery, has had excellent results. He's not here. He's probably tied up, as is Samer Hose, who had an emergency procedure. So anyway, it looks like it's very valuable. You mentioned something, Professor Kaba. I remember when we were using the very expensive intraoperative neuronavigation systems, oftentimes by one out of three times it didn't work, or people didn't know how to use it. The ultrasound is just what you said in your talk. It's practical, it's easy to use, it's inexpensive, it's simple, and you can get a great deal of information. So I think don't be enamored by all the companies wanting you to spend expensive, lots of money on something that you might find this is very helpful for. Now, you have both. You have neuronavigation and ultrasound. Which one do you use, or do you use both?
We combine them. We combine them. We've actually calibrated to combine them. But for emergency cases, we use this time we use only the ultrasound. And I'm tending to like the ultrasound more than the navigation, because once the navigation, you don't have live surgery. I mean, after you open the brain and you even resect the tumor, you're still seeing the same. But the ultrasound, you're seeing live, and you are actually operating, and you're seeing how much tumor you're removing, how much blood you are evacuating, how much cysts you have. You see every little thing, how much saline you are pumping in. So I tend to like the ultrasound these days even more than the neuronavigation. And I think it's the future for neurosurgery. Thank you.
I think we have two questions up. Professor Mombali, you have some comments? Osue?
Wait a minute. Well, Saeed had his hand raised.
Yes.
Go ahead, Saeed.
Okay. I just wanted to mention about the ultrasound Doppler that our previous chair, Dr. Neil Martin, who used to do a lot of vascular anastomosis, ECIC bypass, he used the Doppler for verification of the patency of the artery. And after the anastomosis, he used that one. And I think it's something for the vascular surgeon to remember that Doppler ultrasound is very effective to verification of the patency of the anastomosis and the choice of the artery you are using to do the anastomosis.
You may need a different size probe, but it's a very good observation.
Yeah, that's one thing he used to do it, sir.
Estrada, it's 9:30. We started about 5 minutes after 8. And I think Samer, I'll just give you a short summary. Samer was going to talk to us, and we'll have him come back the next time about, I think, of something that would be of interest to everybody, and that is using a smartphone. And he's a hybrid vascular neurosurgeon. He does interventional neurosurgery and standard neurosurgery. and they were using an interventionalist in Saudi Arabia helping guide people in Baghdad and other places using the smartphone to educate people beforehand, to go through the needs you have beforehand and during the actual procedure to guide them through it. They did 29 cases. They've been very successful with it. So we're going to have him come and talk about it. It's something that seems very practical and can solve a lot of problems with personnel. Strada, you have any other thoughts or comments? I thought the two presentations were outstanding.
Well, I thought they were excellent. I think we're establishing a good foundation to build on. There was one question that others may have in the chat about whether craniotomy or burr hole is needed for doing the ultrasound. If Dr. Kaba could briefly comment on that, then I think we can close.
Yeah, so actually there are two there. How do you maintain a sepsis while using the probe? So usually we use the same theater gun that we use we just put the cable in and then it's aseptic. And then we put the glove, as you can see in the images, and then it's completely aseptic. So there is no problem with that. Now, there are two ways first, you have to do craniotomy. And then immediately you do the craniotomy, the best moment is to do the ultrasound before you open the dura. It helps you to locate yourself. It helps you to mark everything. And it even helps you to also get the image and the surrounding structures. By then, if you were using only the neural navigation, there would have been brain shift and you wouldn't be able to actually be in the same position. But the ultrasound will help you to see that very well. Now, there are moments, for instance, when we do post-op, when we are in the ICU, sometimes we can use the ultrasound to measure the flow of the middle cerebral artery. You just put the ultrasound there, that you don't need craniotomy. You put it right there and you can see the flow. You can do the Doppler, and I agree with Professor Said. Whenever you do the Doppler mode, you can actually see the vascularization and how the blood flow is. So yes, during tumor surgery, do craniotomy, do ultrasound, open dura, you can do ultrasound again. Before we used to hold it whilst we operate, now and then you come in and out. But now you can actually have a system where you adapt it to the brain and you're operating, you don't need to be removing it back and forth. You have it on the brain and you're just operating and you see how much tumor you remove it. Thank you.
Luis, are you still here from Mexico? I see you're still there. Any comments on do you use intraoperative ultrasound? Any comments, any experience?
Yes, we use both. We use neuro navigation and ultrasound intraoperative, and it's a very remarkable tool for surgery. And we use it in cases of tumors and hydrocephalus as well, as the doctor presented the cases.
Do you use ultrasound more frequently than you use neuro navigation?
Both. We use both.
You use them both at the same time? Both.
Yes.
Okay, terrific.
In resecting tumors, we use both.
Okay, anybody else have any questions? Okay, well, Strada, I think. Gilbert, yes, Gilbert, yes, please.
No, just to say some words and congratulations and good presentations, very, very impressive, very interesting, and very informative. So we are waiting for the next courses, maybe in 1 month or 2 months. I don't know exactly when.
Thank you very much.
So along those lines, we're planning a regular recurrence on the first Sunday at the same time as this. So the program committee will meet in about a week to determine the agenda, but this is going to be a recurring forum every first Sunday of the month.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both Professor Kaba and Kabulo for their presentations, and Luis for commenting and joining us, everyone else for coming. We hope you've enjoyed it. Estrada, any last comments?
No, excellent presentations, and I appreciate the very active participation. And I think we'll end it now, and look forward to the forum in a month. the first Sunday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as a diagnosis or treatment of a health-related problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to obtain CME credit and to help us improve our programming. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions, comments, and requests for CME to ausman@snidigital.org. There are many ways to learn. This foundation supports Surgical Neurology International, SNI. It is a 2D internet journal. Its editor-in-chief is Nancy Epstein, and the web address is sni.global. SNI Digital Innovations in Learning is a new 3D video journal, interactive with discussion, and its web address is snidigital.org. Both are free on the internet, 24/7, 365. Surgical Neurology International is read in 239 countries and territories. It's the third largest neurosurgery journal in readership since 2010. And SNI Digital Innovations in Learning has now been viewed in 104 countries in 4 months. It's the first video journal of neurosurgery. Our goal is to help people throughout the world. This is also supported by the Medical News Network, which is dedicated to bringing truthful medical and science news to the world. This program is supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, a USA 501c3 operating charitable foundation. Copyright is 2024, all rights reserved. Thank you very much for watching.